The year is 1942, and the Nazis are racing to build an atomic bomb. They have the physicists. They have the will. What they don't have is enough heavy water, an essential ingredient in their plans to obtain a weapon that would decide the war. In a remote mountainous valley in Norway stood the lone plant in all the world that made this rare substance in any quantity. For 2 years, the Nazis have occupied Norway and with it controlled a massive industrial complex where, under the threat of death, its engineers have pushed production into overdrive. It is the story told in the new book, The Winter Fortress, the epic mission to sabotage Hitler's atomic bomb. Neil Bascom is the author, who also authored such books as Hunting Eichmann, The Perfect Mile, Higher, and Red Mutiny. His new book, again, is The Winter Fortress, and we welcome Neil Bascom to the roundtable this morning. Neil, thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to this subject initially?
One of my favorite books is Richard Rhodes' The Making of the Atomic Bomb. And in that sort of grand history of the atomic development, there's this little story of the sabotage of the German atomic bomb program at Vermont. And it's, you know, it covers a few pages, but when I read it, you know, it was one of those stories I had to know more. And so I went to Norway and I started to do just a little digging into it and found that there was just a trove of diaries and letters and the like that had never been plumbed before. And so I was like, oh, I have to do this.
So bring us to this point in 1942 where the Nazis are racing to build the bomb. What did they have going for them? What did they have going against them?
You know, the splitting of the atom happened in 1939, and up to and including 1942, the Germans and the Americans were in very similar places. They'd done the basic atomic research, the theoretical research, and they both of them had collected uranium and what are called moderators, heavy water or graphite, that helped foster a nuclear reactor. And it was sort of at that critical juncture that the Americans say, okay, we're going to go ahead and do the Manhattan Project. We're going to throw everything at the wall to make it happen. And the Germans, in a different way, say, you know what? The war is not going as well as we want it to. Anything we need within a year. But you guys, you atomic physicists, do your basic research, continue. And if you can make a reactor work with heavy water, we'll shower you with resources. And so that's what makes Vermuk and the sabotage of the Winter Fortress so critical to this story.
They are in Norway. They have occupied Norway for some 2 years. So what are they able to do to get the heavy water that they need to complete this project?
So the Vermuk, this heavy water plant, is the lone place in the world that produces heavy water in any capacity. And when the Germans occupy, they send their scientists into the plant and basically by the barrel of a gun say you must increase production twofold, then fivefold, then tenfold. And so by 1942, the heavy water is now coming out of the facility at a fairly rapid rate. And that's what makes this sabotage so important, because we now have the point where they're producing enough of it. And the Allies are alerted to it thanks to the individual who actually built this plant, a man named Leif Tronstadt, who was a scientist, a professor, and he was spying on the Germans in Norway, and he escaped to London to alert them to this fact. And that sort of begins this roll of events to stop the Germans at Vermuk.
I am curious, before we go on with the story, of how much new information you were able to obtain and what the treasure trove was for you in finding out more about this.
In terms of the material that I found, Leif Tronstadt, for instance, he had left diaries, daily entries that told what he was thinking, what he was doing, who he was meeting. All the operation of Vermuk, as well as all everything he was doing, it sort of gives an inside window into his soul in many ways. And I found similar things for many of these saboteurs. A man named Einar Schinnerland, who was on the ground probably longest than anyone, he left daily diaries. And then there's the secret reports and the letters that these individuals wrote, as well as their family memories. I became quite close with several of the families, and they kind of opened their doors to me. So it was just, you know, I've written several books, and, you know, some I've had a limited amount of information, some I've had a great deal. This one I had more than I ever could have dreamed of.
So when it comes to this actual place, this actual facility where the heavy water is being produced, what is the plan to get there to destroy this? Because as you point out in the book, this is it's in a gorge, it's very cold, quite inhospitable.
Yeah, so it's 100 miles west of Oslo. It's at the edge of a precipice. It's surrounded by this Arctic wild, this high mountain plateau that's basically rock, ice, and snow. And there are, you know, Life Transat escapes to England, and then this begins this series of events where they decide, okay, we need to hit this plant, but how are we going to do it? And the Allies want to bomb this place. They just want to send in B-17s and B-24s and just destroy it from the air. But Transat tells them, you know, listen, you're not going to be able to hit the plant where it matters, because it's this fortress of steel and concrete and stone, and the heavy water production is in the basement. And two, you're going to kill a lot of civilians who live in the surrounding company town in Rjukan. So Transat decides, okay, well, then we need to send in, commandos. And the British originally send in two teams of Royal Engineers. But that mission sadly ends in utter catastrophe. The gliders that go in crash. And this launches the mission that is called Operation Gunnerside, which is these 10 commandos, Norwegian commandos, who know the area, can survive in it, were born with, you know, not literally, but figuratively, cross-country skis on their feet, and they can navigate this area. And so this begins Gunnerside. These men are landed there. They have to survive, you know, for the course of months, some of them, in advance to prepare the operation, to gather intelligence. And then this begins the mission to attack the plant, much of it informed by Leif Tronstadt, who had built it. So he knew every stairwell and every lock on the door and the guard rotations and everything.
As you point out, and as you just pointed out, but you certainly do so in the book, that Tronstadt was really the mastermind of the operation, but not a whole lot known about this guy. Very little mentioned about him in the history books thus far.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I like to do with Winter Fortress, and I'm proud that I've done, is sort of restore his place in history. I mean, he was a fascinating guy. He was a genius scientist. He built this plant, and then his fingerprints were all over every single operation that was targeted to destroy it. I mean, all these secret ports, there's Tronstadt's name. If you read Richard Rhodes's book, if you read any other history of this story, it's largely he's rarely mentioned, and the British command is the one that is doing everything. But Tronstadt, like you said, was definitely the mastermind. And, you know, he endured a lot of sacrifice. His family did. He was a very brave guy, and he was a genius at orchestrating these events.
Ultimately, when you think about the story and this mission to sabotage Hitler's atomic bomb, what do we learn from it, and what can we employ from this story today?
Well, I think what I learned from it is, you know, just from the basis of the fact that these were ordinary guys. They were plumbers and teachers and clerks, and they were thrust into this position of doing this extraordinary thing, which is attacking this plant, which many people thought was impenetrable. And over a series of events, you know, extremely brave, they managed to do it. So I think it is, again, this kind of story of ordinary people doing great things. In terms of sort of what to take away from it, I think the key to the success of this mission and its ability to stop the Germans in the production of heavy water is the importance of intelligence, how much of an inside look that they had not only what the production quotas were, but how to penetrate the place. And I know that, you know, in the modern day, we are dealing with, you know, countries that are potentially pursuing atomic programs. And having that window of intelligence is essential to any possibility of potentially stopping them.
And what information did we learn for our very own atomic program?
Well, here's what I think is critical about this story in our atomic bomb program, the Manhattan Project. It's what Leif Tronstadt conveyed to the Allies was that the heavy water was being intensely pursued, and that meant, and the Allies agreed, that the Germans were pursuing atomic weapons. And there was very little information on what the Germans were doing. Vermuk was the one place that it was clear that the Germans were doing this. And that, in and of itself, made the Manhattan Project and the thrust to go as quickly as possible and do everything possible to get a bomb even more important. So I think in some ways, and it's little seen or written about, this Vermuk plant became in some ways the impetus for the acceleration of the Manhattan Project. And you see that all over the files and secret reports, talking about the German program, talking about heavy water as a clear indication that America must do more.
The name of the book, The Winter Fortress, The Epic Mission to Sabotage Hitler's Atomic Bomb. Neil Bascom, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Winter Fortress, by Neil Bascom. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.